It's time for Twit This Week in Tech. Rafe Needleman's here from Yahoo Tech. Chris Breen from MacWorld.com. We'll find out why Apple discontinued the iPod Classic. The answer may surprise you. Andy Rubin's leaving Google. What's he up to next? And we'll take a look at his legacy, Lollipop, Android 5.0, plus the amazing athletic adventures of Jason Howell. It's all next on Twit.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 482, recorded November 2nd, 2014. The Microsoft Shackle. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Citrix GoToMeeting, a powerfully simple way to meet with coworkers and clients from the convenience of the computer, smartphone, or tablet. Share the same screen, see each other face-to-face with HD video conferencing. For a 30-day free trial, visit GoToMeeting.com today. And by Carbonite. Whether you have one computer at home or several at your small business, Carbonite backs up your files to the cloud automatically and continually. Plus, access your files anytime, anywhere with a free app. Start your free trial at Carbonite.com. No credit card required, and use the offer code TWIT to get 2 bonus months with purchase. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Visit audible.com/twit2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter, user ID audible_com. And by stamps.com. Start using your time more effectively with stamps.com. Use stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For our special offer, go to stamps.com, click the microphone, and enter Twit. It's time for Twit This Week in Tech, the show that covers the tech's news of the week with the top tech reporters in the field. One of the reasons I love doing this show is because this is how I learn what it all means. We bring in really smart people and they explain to me. Let's say hi to Chris Breen. Haven't seen him in ages from MacWorld.com. One of the few remaining MacWorld.com employees.
Yes. It's quality. They kept me on for the quality.
They kept Mac 911. But you were already working on the website, so it makes sense that if you shutter print, that you keep the web people around. Somebody's got to do it.
Well, yeah. I mean, we've been doing web first for a really, really, really long time. And so it was, you know, it's the nature of the print business is that print magazines just aren't happening anymore. So they killed that. And not unexpectedly, PC World went down last year. So it was our turn. And yet we carry on and we're going to do what we can.
You asked me when we started talking about this before the show, when's the last time you wrote a book? And it's true. I mean, print. People like Paul Theriot, who continue to write books, I'm not sure why, and I'm not sure who's buying print books.
Well, you write a book, you don't have to have it be printed.
No, in fact, nowadays, a lot of what he does is online. Hey, that's Rafe Needleman. So nice to see you. This is kind of a reunion of sorts for all three of us. We haven't had you on in ages since you were back at CNET.
Yep.
Went to Evernote for a while, and now you're editorial director at Yahoo's Tech Channel.
Yahoo Tech. I'm working with David Pogue. Tech.
He's your star.
Yeah.
It's Katie Couric. Stop by once in a while. Say hi.
Talk to her. Yeah. Yeah. It's really awesome to work with a company that can get star power like that.
That's kind of cool.
It's really neat. I'm having a great time. Yeah.
You ever see Marissa?
Yeah, of course.
She stopped by once in a while. Says, how's it going, Rafe?
All the time. We chat.
I have a real soft spot in my heart for Yahoo. I think all of those of us who are old timers, and, you know, my Yahoo was my start page for a long time on the internet. And, you know, Yahoo was my first search engine.
You never forget your first search
engine. You never forget your first search engine. So I sometimes feel like some people in the tech press and the public are rooting against Yahoo. I've always been rooting for it. I want it to do well.
The interesting thing about Yahoo is that outside of the tech bubble, where it's...
You're king.
It's everything, yeah.
And tech bubble people don't know about things like OMG, which is a huge property. It's the gossip channel. TV.com. These are very big content properties that, you're right, I think normal people know about. But they're kind of... It's not
the cool new thing anymore.
The interesting thing about working for Yahoo and for the Yahoo audience, I've never worked for this mainstream an audience before. It is so hard.
Yes.
And it's, I mean, to write in a way that is both accurate and approachable for everybody.
Challenging.
Oh, my God. But well, it's really good. I like it.
That's why one of the reasons I keep doing the radio shows, because it keeps you in touch with what normal people are worried about, as opposed to what we in the tech bubble are worried about. But this show is a tech bubble show. I don't mind saying this show is by and for enthusiasts.
Oh, yeah.
Because it saves us a lot of time. Well, the internet, see, is this interconnection of computers all over the world. We don't have to say that. We can assume, take it as written that you all know what. So I guess, boy, what is the big story? There were a lot of big stories this week. I do apologize. We had booked Kara Swisher for this show. I really wanted to get her on this week. And unfortunately, her schedule changed. She had to fly out of town. So we didn't have her on. But I was going to ask her about the Kim Kardashian interview at Recode. Mm-hmm. Which I thought was interesting. And then she wrote an article, and I wasn't going to cover this story without her here, but I'm just going to mention it. But I don't think it's a tech story for us. I think it's a story, more of a social story, but Tim Cook coming out.
Oh, yeah.
And I wasn't going to actually really talk about it, because it doesn't have anything to do with technology. But she wrote, and I think she's right, it has a lot to do with somebody of a huge position of power, very public person, coming out. Is a really great signal to young gay men and women who might be worried about how the world's going to receive them. Mm-hmm. And you're saying, here's a guy who is running the most valuable company in the world. And he says, I'm glad. He says, a gift from God. Kara wrote a good article about it. I was going to ask her about it, but yeah, there it is.
It's good for him.
Yeah, good for him. She says it's the Tim Cook moment. But that's all we'll do, because we want to talk about actual technologies as opposed to the kind of the gossipy social angle. Although not that I'm against gossip.
Tim Cook coming out isn't gossip. It is like a huge, it's just a huge step forward for humanity, if you ask me.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
Well, and I also think it humanizes Apple more. And I think that's something that Tim's been doing since he's come in. He's gotten the Steve Jobs monkey off his back.
Well, that's clear, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they're talking about things like the environment much more than they had before. I mean, they always had sort of the green push initiative, but Tim Cook really means it. And talking about social issues, trying to do something about labor issues in China. And I think this is where he kind of steps up and he walks the walk and says, and in addition to that, this is who I am. He humanizes himself. He humanizes the company. And I think he kind of puts this whole CEO as a superhero, but with a touch of evil in them behind us a little bit.
He's coming out of the mountain is where he's coming out. He's not in his evil lair anymore.
Yeah, but and you know, there was that trend of sort of the Ellisons and the Ballmers and Steve Jobs and these CEOs that were brilliant, but you know, sort of people you wouldn't want to meet on the street because they'd kill you. And where I think with Tim Cook, he's more of the kind of a guy who has a real life, and you say, yeah, this is an individual who's willing to talk about himself and not be that guy, as tough as he may be in business, but to actually show that he's a human being.
He's talking here at the Wall Street Journal conference. About retailers, this is a big story this week about, and last week too, about retailers like CVS and Rite Aid that are in the MCX group and aren't doing, or they're going to do currency. He talks a little bit about that here in this. Can you get my audio or no?
We've been at it for a week, and I followed these numbers pretty closely. In the first 72 hours, we had gone over the 1 million mark on activations of cards. And Visa and MasterCard, we talked to these guys today, and they told us that if you sum up everyone else that's in the contactless mobile payment at the point of sale, we're already number one. And not just number one, but we're more than the total of all the other guys. And we've only been at it a week. And so I feel fantastic. I think it's great. Now, we've got a lot more to go. We've got a lot of merchants to sign up. We've got a lot more banks to sign up, and we have the whole rest of the world. We're only in the U.S. right now. And so we're just getting started, but the early ramp looks fantastic. And I'm getting flooded with emails from customers that are just, you know, it's sort of that ah moment. You use the phone, and that's all you have to do.
Now, this is all sales stuff.
Whole Foods and did this, and it's unbelievable. You're no longer fishing for the credit card. You're no longer worried about
We're going to cut this out, but can we cut right to the part? It's not that long a soundbite.
And last year. And so I think it's the first and only mobile payment system that's both easy, private, and secure. So I think we hit on all three
I don't
key
think he
points
talks
that
about
the customer cares about.
Bite. Is that the beginning? He's well spoken. He's very good at making.
He really
anything.
Turned it into a sales pitch by the end. Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, I wanted to have him talk about currency and why he's not worried about it. I'll tell you a good reason why he's not worried about it. Currency has already been hacked. So that's a bad start for a system that is ridiculously is not available. Number one is ridiculously complicated. You have to take a pic. You have to have the app. You have to take a picture of a QR code. You have to then show that QR code to the camera on the other side to register it back to the it's nuts,
and it doesn't hook into the credit card system.
Well, and that's the point of it, right? So they don't have to give any money to the credit card system, and they can keep all the information,
right? So I've got to give some new system access to my checking account,
right?
Thank you very much,
right? And you're
no
apparently
fault.
They ask for your social, they ask for your home, they know your home address, they know all sorts of stuff, and so it is cause for concern. You know, the currency folks said, oh no, we're secure. Customer Whoops. Email addresses were hacked. Now, currency says, well, it wasn't us that was hacked. It was a third party that was using that had the email addresses. Well, that doesn't make me feel better.
We did a story on how to punish stores that have turned off Apple Pay if you're really mad at them. Just a silly thing.
Do you think people are going to do that?
Punish them?
Yeah.
And the way you punish them is to use a credit card with the highest possible charge to the
American Express, right?
Yeah, right.
Just use your Amex from now on at all Rite Aid stores.
Yeah. I think people are going to be pissed.
I think it's a non-starter.
What, currency?
Yeah.
It's just insane because, I mean, not to sound like a fanboy, but I'm already bored by Apple Pay because it is just so unbelievably easy. It actually works. It's such a non-event to use it.
Right.
So, Chris, didn't you say that? I think somebody.
Yeah, I think it's a really great system. And the take I have on this story is that Apple Pay is great for us as consumers. It's great for the credit card companies because they're going to make more money because people are going to use the thing more. It's good for the banks, but it's not so good for the retailers because they're trying to get out from under credit cards. So you understand why they're doing this.
Right.
But you're right. It's a terrible implementation. It's consumer hostile. And so I think it is kind of a non-starter where people are going to go in and just say, you know, I'll go to Walgreens instead because they're going to accept Apple Pay and you are not. And I think that's too bad because I would like to see the retailers get something out of this, but it's not going to be that way. It's going to have to be some other method where they're going to get a break somehow on credit card payments or something. So that they want to be part of it.
It is ironic. And I almost wonder maybe if they've been targeted by disgruntled Apple Pay lovers. Because they aren't even public. They're still in a pilot program. Yeah. And they had to send out an email to their pilot users saying an unauthorized third party had obtained email addresses. They said, don't worry. A lot of the addresses are dummy accounts used for testing purposes. That's not a reassurance if you're not a dummy account. The currency was not affected. So don't worry. And yes, we take your security very seriously. We're not any good at it, but we take it seriously.
Right. And they're just dummies who are using dummy accounts. Oh, sorry. Okay.
Please. Some of you were dummies. I think this is an example of just one. This is the nail in the coffin. This is like, you couldn't get much worse than that.
By the time it rolls out, if it ever rolls out, this will have been forgotten. But by then, Apple Pay will be, people will be so accustomed to using it at Whole Foods and Walgreens that they'll go to a store and they don't have Apple Pay, and I have to use this other system that wants my social. It's like, no thanks.
Right.
So it's dumb. Very, very. If you make a customer happy because a transaction is easy, they will come back and buy more stuff. If the transaction has a lot of friction, you're going to lose money.
But you can still use cash and a credit card at any one of these stores, right? So
if
Walgreens is right there, maybe you'll use Walgreens. But if it's another mile down the road, it just seems to me people are going to do what's convenient. I don't think Apple Pay by itself Maybe it does. Does it make you want to shop somewhere because they have Apple Pay?
It does because I'm a nerd, yeah. But I think
I just want to use it.
I think it's Apple Pay's been out now, what, for a month?
Not even that.
Less?
2 weeks.
No, a couple of weeks.
Okay, 2 weeks, and it's already boring and reliable.
Yeah.
So, and it's only just come out, but what is left that Apple can do? This, you think this is it? That Apple's just going to roll out Apple Pay and that's it? Where are the coupons? Yeah. Where are the loyalty programs?
Yeah.
Where are all the little things you do with plastic cards that you are now going to be able to do with Apple Pay?
Good point.
This is just the beginning of how Apple is going to make retail better, or try to anyway.
Yeah. And as I think it was Philip Elmer DeWitt last week pointed out on Twit, one benefit of Apple Pay is the lines move faster. And that would get me to go somewhere. If I knew that the line was twice as fast at Walgreens, I might go across the street just because I could get out faster. Yeah. That's a benefit. I don't know if we mentioned this last week. They are talking with China about Alipay. Alibaba has its own pay solution. And if they put Apple Pay in China through Alipay, that's a huge deal.
That opens it up worldwide. Well,
very big.
Globally, yeah.
I feel like I'm trying to remember if we've done some of these last week.
Well, yeah. I mean, this the whole getting into China thing is huge to the point where, you know, you think of Apple as being a technology company and they're selling lots of iPhones. And I've been talking about the iPhone as money forever, and I think a lot of us have. And now that it is, and think of, because they get, 0.025% or something per transaction. And or maybe it's 0.25%. That turns out, in the U.S. alone, we spend $2 trillion on credit card purchases. So if all that was going to Apple Pay, that would be $3 billion a year in transactions.
And remember, that doesn't come out of your pocket directly. It comes from the credit card transaction.
It comes from the credit card company. So now expand that to worldwide and say, okay, well, that's ridiculous. Of course, Apple's not going to get all that. Let's say they get a third of that over time. That's still an enormous amount of money, and in using a system that people are encouraged to buy with. Where it first, I mean, I think when Tim was talking in the sales pitch about, we already have 1 million people. Well, of course they do, because they sold a ton of iPhone 6s, and people were interested in the novelty of it. So sure, people signed up in droves. But I think as more people see that in action, and we have more and more devices that do that, they're going to get more people thinking of, you know, not only because of the security problems with their credit cards, like I just had to renew my credit card for a third time in the last 2 years.
Right?
But Apple's selling privacy as a feature now. And so the ability to be able to have a unique transaction with every Apple Pay purchase is enormously powerful. So you can put that kind of stuff behind you, be encouraged to use it more. And then again, on the other side, you've got the merchant saying, well, no, use this. It's less secure. We need more information from you. And you want that? No, because they're not going to kick back the money they're saving for the credit
card. It's not like you get it back, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that could be a feature for them if they make this less intrusive and say, look, we're not paying credit card fees anymore, so we're going to give you that 2% or that 3%.
Yeah.
Maybe that's attractive, but they have to scale down the onerousness of the other stuff first.
Here's the quote. When asked about CVS and Rite Aid, Cook said, it's a skirmish. Over the long arc of time, retailers will step back and say, no other system is more secure. I think that's been demonstrated now. You're only relevant. Now, I don't know if I agree with this, but what do you think? You're only relevant as a retailer if your customers love you.
Tell that to Comcast.
Yeah. I don't think I love CVS. Or Walgreens. It's just where I go to get my, my eye drops. Apple is loved.
Apple
can say that, you know, that works for us.
Right. Well, Apple wants other companies to treat their customers the same way that customers feel about Apple.
Right. Hey, if you can get them to love you, more power to it.
Yeah.
He also explained why they killed the iPod Classic. We couldn't get the parts.
I wonder which part that was. Was it the hard drive? Was it some circuit board?
So that hard drive is a Toshiba hard drive, right?
It's a tiny little hard drive.
Yeah, I remember when IBM first came out with them, they were compact flash sized.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I don't remember how big they were, but they're spinning. They're literally in the 160 gig iPod Classic, a spinning hard drive.
Right.
Yeah.
Old fashioned.
I bet you. I'm thinking they don't make those anymore. That's what I'm guessing.
Yeah, I think they had them on the shelves for as long as they could, because I thought they'd killed the thing a couple of years ago, and they didn't. I wrote the obit for it 3 years ago,
Right. Thinking
someday I'm going to... And finally, I got to dust it off and, you know, update the dates on it, and then it was out right away. But I think they're right. You know, they stocked them as long as they could, and they finally got to the point where they said, well, okay, we finally cleared them out. People who have them love the things because of the capacity.
I bought one because I just like you, I figured this is it a year ago. And I bought one because I keep it in my car. That's my music system in the car.
Yeah.
I could just see that guy. There's some guy who they have a shelves of Toshibas. And he gets the last one. He blows off the dust. They put it in an iPod. And that's it. We're out.
We're done.
We're done. Close the line. It's a... is this it? This is the Toshiba MK1626 GCB. It is the sixth generation iPod Classic, 160 gig hard drive. I bet you Toshiba just stopped making them.
Yeah, well, why?
What market is there besides the iPod?
They're not going to be, 160 gigabytes of storage. Eventually, the flash RAM or flash storage will be less money.
That's right.
Faster and more reliable.
That's right.
Now, you could put a flash drive in an iPod Classic, but you might as well make it a touch with, right now, Can you get a touch with 128 gigs? You can get an iPhone with 128 gigs.
That's a good question.
It's getting close.
I don't think they've updated then. I think it's still a 64.
Yeah.
And also...
There's still a shop iPod button at the Apple Store. I'm amazed. Oh. and then right underneath it, Beats by Dre. I don't know how many of these they're selling. No, 64 gigs is the largest iPod touch.
Well, if they wanted to, they can make a 128.
Aren't we moving in a way away from all this local storage anyway? We're moving towards streaming and... I feel like I don't need to have as much storage as I used to think I needed.
You have a story about that, which is that, for the first time, Apple's revenue on purchased music is going down.
Yeah, that's a huge... you think it's connected to that? That makes sense. They dropped 13% in 2014, mm-hmm. which isn't even over yet, 13% in revenues on iTunes music.
Yeah, because people are moving to streaming. That's my belief.
I bet you're right.
I mean, I'd rather pay, $10 a month for Spotify. It's $120 bucks a year. I get all the music I want. I've got reliable enough cell coverage in the car, so I can stream whatever I want. When I want to have something on the airplane when I'm not connected, I download it. Done. I don't need to buy music anymore.
And remember, iTunes is the number one music retailer. The RIAA reported in the U.S. sales of digital singles fell 11% in the first 6 months. Sales of albums fell 14% in the first 6 months. So it's across the board.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, music service revenue jumped 28% in the first 6 months. But of course, now, Chris, you're a working musician.
Yeah.
I have to think this is bad for musicians.
Yeah, streaming is not good for musicians.
You get no money from Spotify.
Yeah, we've seen the stories. I mean, there was the Lady Gaga story, a couple of years ago, where, people streamed 8 trillion spins of something of hers, and she made like $1.48 on it or something. I mean, it was just ridiculous.
That's terrible.
Little money. But it is the way it's... I mean, I look at my daughter, who's 13. She hasn't purchased music ever, because we have streaming, and we've had it for years.
But I look at my kids now. I don't know. You tell me, because you both have kids who are, younger. They don't even really stream music. They watch YouTube. I guess they stream when they're in the car. No, actually, Abby wants downloads, but she's 22. See, she's of a different generation already. Mm-hmm. But I do notice most music. Chris, you're 16, right? 17?
I download, but my sister, who's a little bit younger than me, she listens to all her music on YouTube, and I listen to a lot of music.
YouTube is a very big source of music. In fact, I think that's... That's another story that Google, I think, is going to start making money on YouTube Music. They keep saying they're going to do that. They're going to sell that as a subscription.
Makes sense.
All right. Enough Apple. Everybody's going, hey, you talk about Apple all the time. Okay, we're going to talk about Google. We're going to talk about Microsoft. We're going to talk about Twitter. We're going to even talk about hardware. We're going to talk about HP. When's the last time we talked about HP? There's something to say about HP, but let me talk first about Citrix. Go to meeting, the place to go if you have... as most of us do, clients or colleagues who are not in the same building with you. They're not maybe even the same town. They may not even be in the same country. Nowadays, everybody is spread out all over the place. The last thing you want to do is spend time in an airplane traveling to meet with coworkers or new prospects. Wouldn't it be cool if you could present that sales pitch or work together online? You can with Citrix GoToMeeting. You never even have to leave your desk. In fact, you might never even have to leave your backyard because you can use an iPad or a mobile device to join a meeting. You could present from the iPad. You'll save time. You'll get more done. And you'll even see each other face-to-face. You don't even give that up. GoToMeeting now has really nice HD video conferencing built in. So you share screens so you can collaborate on documents. You can see each other face-to-face. It's a very easy way to schedule meetings. They have a simple way to do it in Outlook. You just send out a meeting invitation, but you don't have to do that. It's so easy to start a meeting. You can press a button and say, hey, let's meet right now. And it's simple. Plus, you pay once and meet as many times as you want for as long as you want each month. I love it. GoToMeeting. We use it. I want you to try it. 30 days free. Just visit GoToMeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button. And you got 30 days free waiting for you. GoToMeeting from Citrix. GoToMeeting.com. Try it free. Rafe Needleman is here. He's editorial director at the Yahoo Tech site. Tech.yahoo.com. Great to have you. He's at R-A-F-E on the Twitter. Chris Breen, my old buddy from Macworld magazine. Still there, Macworld.com. He's does the Mac 911 column. Keeps us all using our Mac. Macs are back, I feel like.
Macs are back. You know, we write about all the stuff. The iOS stuff, the Apple TV stuff, the Mac stuff. Yeah, but Macs are... they're doing quite well.
Just got the 5K iMac. I reviewed it, and now I have it at home because I bought it.
How do you like it?
Oh.
You bought it?
Yeah. It's kind of, well, so, okay, I made the mistake of buying a Mac Pro, the little beautiful.
The trash can.
Trash can.
Yeah.
Thanks. Makes me feel even better about it. And I've been using it, and I spent a lot of money on this because not only did I get that, but then you have to get external storage, so I got, you know, the little big drive, and then I had to get a 4K monitor because blah, blah, blah. So at the end of the line, I don't know, I've spent a ton of money, and it's not as fast, and it doesn't look as good as the 5K iMac, and it's twice as much or more. It kills me. In fact,
well, it depends what you do with it. If you're doing multi-core stuff, it actually is faster. Single core, the iMac, yeah, has an edge.
Yeah, we got the i7 top of the line, and it's 4 gigahertz. I thought we weren't going to see 4 gigahertz processors. Didn't Intel kind of give up on? Mm-hmm. Well, they can't beat it anyway. So it's the fastest single core processor out there.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't get a 5K screen on the Mac Pro because you can't drive it. The Thunderbolt's not fast enough.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't. I think Apple is a little confused about its Mac Pro strategy right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
And they haven't updated the Thunderbolt display. That's still the fat bezel, right. Not the thin bezel.
Right.
So, yeah, if you want the ultimate computer for editing video, it's not a Pro.
Right.
And
that's sad.
That's not the way God intended things to be.
Yeah. God had something to do with this. All right. God and Tim Cook. Andy Rubin is leaving Google. I wonder if this has a little bit to do with last week's story that Sundar Pichai had been promoted now to run most of Google. He's Larry Page's number two guy. Andy Rubin was brought in when Google bought Android. He was the creator of Android. He had worked at Danger before that.
Danger. Remember they had the greatest ads with the gorillas walking down the street. Remember that?
Danger had all the smart guys from Apple, like Andy Hertzfeld. Really interesting guys. And I think the Sidekick was their first and only product, I'm thinking.
They made a couple of different versions of the Sidekick.
Right.
That had their really creative flip-out screen.
Loved that!
Yeah. That was really a neat product.
If you want to look dated, if anybody made a movie with... This is so funny. For some reason, cell phones date you faster than neckties, hair, anything. Lapel size. Boy, that would look really dated if you had a Sidekick. And remember, you flipped it up like that and you started typing like that.
I was always afraid I was going to flip it and it would just keep going.
I wonder if my Sidekick is around somewhere. I'd love.
You know, it won't work anymore.
It won't work at all.
No,
because they killed the server, right?
Right, because it was a proxy server. So the site.
Terrible idea.
It was a great idea.
Well, it sped things up, but yes. Every bit of everything you did was stored not on your phone,
right?
But with Danger.
Yes,
that was a good idea.
Especially when you say it that way. Stored with danger.
My middle name is Danger.
But it's the only way, the networks were so slow then, that was the only way you could, like, get email and browse the web.
It was a phone for its time.
Back in the day.
Its time didn't last very long. So Andy had been running Android until recently, moved on to do what Google calls a moonshot with robots. He was always a robot guy, hence the name Android. In fact, before he worked at Danger, I think he was doing robots. Anyway, he's leaving. And I wonder if this maybe is the beginning of a little bit of a brain drain for Google, who has shown pretty clearly that Sundar Pichai is the guy.
Yeah, you know, I'm pretty cynical about moves like this. But in this particular case, you know, Andy's done a lot for Google.
He did work for Apple, too.
And he was, I think, doing his dream job or anybody's dream job at Google. He was working on robots.
Yeah.
And now he's going to spin off and do an independent incubator on robots.
Right.
If I'm not him, but that sounds like a pretty awesome job.
Right.
You know, basically doing the Google robot moonshots, but with, you know, his and other people's money and more interesting entrepreneurs than even he could find at Google. It sounds pretty cool to me.
Google says we'll continue with our robot efforts. But it's a little bit of a loss to lose, like,
oh, yeah,
the guy.
It is.
He was the guy who bought the those crazy running robots from Boston Dynamics, those scary dog robots.
Well, the conspiracy theory on this is that he doesn't want to be part of the military-industrial complex. And Google has said that they're not going to sell their products to the military, but, I mean,
Boston Dynamics has Boston big Dynamics. Military contracts.
Yeah, so I don't know how that works out.
Yeah. An analyst at IDC says it's surprising and sounds, there it is, that's the Wildcat. This is the scariest robot ever. First of all, it's really noisy. Go ahead and turn up the sound. And then, imagine like you're walking down the street and you see this thing. That's my worst nightmare right there. It's running down, for those who are listening, it's running. It looks like it's called Big Dog. That one's Big Dog.
This is Wildcat.
That's Wildcat?
Yeah. Big Dog is the one that
walks in the woods.
Looks like a horse.
Right. Which would you rather fight?
Let's just imagine that charging towards you right now.
Ooh. Look how fast it goes.
That is impressive.
It doesn't turn very well, so
it doesn't have to.
Is to run serpentine, and it will get confused. Is that right? All I have to do is run faster than Rafe.
Wow. Yeah. You know, it's like they took all the wrong lessons from the sci-fi books of the 1960s and 70s. Like, no, this will be really cool if we have robots that kill people.
Were we supposed to put an on-off switch? Oh, we forgot.
Oh, gosh. And we gave them intelligence. Who would have thought that would have been a problem?
Oh, well. Yeah, it did seem kind of sudden. That's what IDC's analyst said. It seems a little unplanned and a little sudden and perhaps involuntary. I don't think so. I think this is Andy Rubin's decision, but maybe he had a better idea suddenly. In the middle of the night, he woke up and said, I'm leaving Google. It will be a loss for their robotics program. Lollipop is coming. The Google's Nexus phone, the Nexus 6, sold out in, we think, 20 seconds.
So something like that. Yeah, it was quick.
It was painfully fast for those of us trying to buy one. This is the phone. It's a 6-inch, almost 6-inch, 5.95-inch phone with, you know, kind of top-of-the-line specs. And it would be the first phone to run Android 5.0 Lollipop. Google said, we'll put it on sale October 29th. So Jason and I both got up early that morning. Started refreshing the Google store. Refresh, refresh. They hadn't put it on sale by about, I think, 10:30.
Yeah, 10 a.m.
I needed to be here at 10:30. So I left the house at 10:25. I got here at 10:30. It was sold out.
Yep.
You got one.
I did get one. Yes. I had an elaborate system. And
he had two
somehow it worked. I feel like I lucked out more than anything because it was quick.
You're refreshing the left and then the right, then the left and the right.
Different configurations. And then the left one suddenly goes from pre-order start soon immediately to out of inventory. Wow. Like, oh, crap. So then I'm refreshing on the other one like as fast as I can. And somehow it worked.
Did you get the midnight blue or the...
I got the white. 64 gig.
Good. That's the one I would have gotten.
Yeah.
So we'll have that when? Now, when is that? When are they going to ship that?
Supposedly shipping the 21st of November. Although it may be sooner, maybe, you know, who knows? Google isn't very good at this whole, you know, retail thing online. So who knows?
Well, you got to wonder, did they have only 10 of them?
Yeah, that's a really good question.
Or was there such demand?
Or the fact that it's going to all of the carriers, right? At least here in the U.S.
Well, maybe that's it. Maybe so they did
their
only
supply
have a
is
few.
Split.
Yeah, because Verizon, T-Mobile, AT&T, Sprint, and U.S. Cellular all are going to have it. So maybe I can go there and get it, you think?
And possibly, if that ends up being the case, you might even be able to go there sooner than I will get it through the pre-order. Through Google Play, because I think it was expected to be released sooner than this.
And this wasn't 21st. Cheap. I mean, it didn't sell out because it was an inexpensive Nexus phone. This was $650 for the one you got?
The one I got ended up being somewhere around $700.
Once you get all
say.
The taxes?
Yeah, $700, $750, right around there. I mean, not inexpensive. This is priced like any other, you know, top of the line phone.
Well, it is top of the line, though. It's pretty,
exactly.
It's pretty beautiful phone. I'm a little disappointed. I was really looking forward to.
Sounds like what people did with the iPhone. I didn't know that Android nuts are the same dedication.
Apparently.
Staying up till the phone's supposed to go on sale, then hitting all the different screens
at
once.
It's very much the same.
Yeah, exactly what
I
do.
I don't know what's wrong with me, because I also waited in line at the Apple store for 5 hours. So there's something really wrong with me.
Yeah, I was at the Apple store yesterday to pick something up.
Did they have them in stock?
There was a line out the door for iPhones.
That's bizarre. Boy, you'd love to be in that position.
In
a
line?
Month later.
Yeah. It was
unbelievable.
Crazy. I didn't get it.
Wow. Unbelievable.
Don't you want to run up to people like that and it's like, you can buy it online. It'll come to your door.
Well, I was at the mall. I was going to Hot Topic to buy some new a vest and some hot pants. And I saw the Apple store. I thought this would be a good time to pick up an iPhone.
Right.
I guess they do it the first day, you know, because it's kind of an event. But a month later, I have to think, no, just do it online. Yeah. I'm not sure what the attraction is.
It actually reflects a deep psychological problem in the American populace, or actually the world, because the same thing happens everywhere, that we somehow think that this new device will make our life suddenly okay. Like, our lives are going to suddenly we're going to get this shiny thing.
It has, though.
With Apple Pay, right?
I really think this is this is like you know, what was it? Is Neil Postman who wrote "Distracted"? What did he write, John? "Distracted to Death." The whole idea that, you know, we just put all of our hopes and fears and everything into these little shiny gadgets, and we spend ridiculous amounts of money. I mean, $700.
Yeah, it's and time,
that's no jump
and time in line,
right?
And then we hope that we're going to get this home, and then everything is going to be somehow better.
And then we drop it on the concrete, and the screen cracks, and you do it all over again.
Right. That's why I was at the Apple store yesterday to get Apple Pay, not Apple Pay, Apple Care on this thing, just in case.
The Plus? Did you get the Plus?
No, I didn't. I have pockets, so no Plus for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think the Plus is a great deal, because you have to pay, you only get two a year, and you have
Apple Care. You mean the
Care
phone
plus?
No, I'm thinking the phone plus.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, the Apple
there's
Care
a plus,
plus.
Apple Care.
Yeah, that's the replacement plus Apple Care.
I think that's the one I got.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I think it seems like not a good deal, because the deductible's
$79.
Yeah, and then you can only happen twice a year.
But actually, no, there is a method to this that my friends who are excellent at scamming these things are. Right before you're going to get the next one, whether it's the 6S or the 7,
yeah,
you drop the phone, you take it in. They give you a brand new phone, which has amazingly high resale value because it's never been touched.
No kidding. You leave it in the box,
yep,
and you get your new phone.
And then you can sell it
at the best
resale value.
Do you know people that do that? Does David Pogue do that?
No.
He should not be doing that.
David Pogue, I do not believe, does that.
That's
I know many people who do that.
I used to know
I work with a bunch of engineers.
Who would buy...
They game the system.
Who would go buy Manolo Blahnik shoes, you know, $1,000 shoes. She'd put duct tape on the bottom of it. Wear it to a party, take off the tape so it didn't look like it was worn, and return it.
That's brilliant.
It's a scam!
Yes. It's brilliant.
Did you ever do that?
Do not try this at home.
All right. She's looking at me. Me? No. I would never do such a thing. Let's see. They say, the Google folks say, that they think the higher price, this is how crazy it is, on the Nexus 6 will actually mean they sell more of them.
That didn't make any sense.
We're selling Nexus. This is Hiroshi Lockheimer. It's about the best name ever. In fact, why wasn't I Hiroshi Lockheimer for Halloween? Hiroshi Lockheimer, Vice President of Engineering at Android at Google, says, we're selling the Nexus 6 in a way most people are used to buying it.
Through carrots.
So the decision to go with a more expensive product was a result of feedback that showed an interest in a more premium-feeling smartphone. But didn't the Nexus 5 feel premium?
It did, but you could only get it online, right? And I think that's the big difference here is Google's finally stepping up and saying, we are now putting our phones where most people buy their phones, which is at the carrier store.
That's why. So he says, well, counterintuitive, Hiroshi Lockheimer said, it sounds like I'm making it up. Hiroshi Lockheimer said he believes the more traditional price tag will actually spur sales. Google has traditionally promoted the Play Store as the primary source to purchase Nexus devices. And in fact, that's where it was sold out in 20 seconds. But working with carriers, they'll be able to sell it subsidized, right? $200 with a 2-year contract. And people are, what's the word?
I don't know. What word are you looking for?
Dumb? They think that that means the phone costs $200. But, of course, you have to have a 2-year contract, and it gets amortized, baked into the cost of a higher cost of service. So Nexus fans, says Hiroshi Lockheimer, I'm going to keep saying his name, understand the pricing model of an unlocked device, but outside of that, paying $350 up front was a foreign concept, let alone, you know, more, $650. So it's a nice phone. I'm sorry that I didn't get one. We're starting to learn about Lollipop, the features of the new Android 5, many of which are kind of taken from Motorola. That's another thing that happened this week. The transition to Lenovo happened. Mm-hmm. So Motorola is no longer a Google company, but Google stripped all the good ideas out of it before they let them go to Lenovo. Lollipop, which is Android 5, will have the Moto X kind of always the notifications that kind of appear.
The active display.
Active display, they call it. This is a good article from The Verge, the 12 Lollipop features.
Also, it has the always listening thing, I believe.
Yes, you could say, okay, Google. Right. That, by the way, Google is now doing a deal or making it possible for app developers to turn that on. So that you'll be able to do it within an app. And what's interesting is it'll send it back to the app so that the app can... So let's say it's TripIt. So that you'll have searches that are TripIt specific. So you'll get back appropriate search results from Google to the app that you're in, which is kind of cool. Let's say, what else? You can knock on it. Hardware allowing. That's something that OnePlus does. Double tap wakes it up. Right?
You just have to be careful that it doesn't fire off while, you know, you're carrying it in your pocket or your bag.
You said that in the review, and they did make that harder. They did they did in the update, they turned on a proximity sensor.
Yeah, right.
So double tapping it in your pocket, like your nipples hit it or something, and then...
You rock hard nipples, don't you?
Now it has nipple protection, thankfully.
Only because I have a OnePlus One. it won't wake it up. The other thing is, you had the flashlight was coming on.
Yeah, and that one's almost even worse, right? Because then the flashlight's going off in your pocket. You don't know until, of course, your leg burns.
Right.
But that burns battery really
You're
fast.
You're glowing.
Yeah.
So
they've kind of worked on that. So. Face unlock. That,
okay,
remember
so
this
it's
one?
Always looking at you.
Remember this one?
Yes. Yeah. So the face unlock, which doesn't work well at all on Android, right?
On the older versions of Android,
it's the part of the lock screen.
This is so a different implementation of it.
I usually do a pattern, but you can have it look at you. But you have to be just right in the right light. You can't do it in the dark. You wait a second, and then it unlocks.
Here's where they got it right this time, though. Last time, it was how you unlocked your device. You have to recognize my face, and if you don't, after 3 seconds, then I had to put in my PIN code. So it took a ton of time to get into your phone, which doesn't work for a security method. Now it's an extra thing that just when it works, it bypasses your PIN number. When it doesn't work, and basically what you're doing is it's another layer. So if it recognizes your face,
it starts looking at you as soon as it can.
Yes, it does. that's true.
So the camera's always on?
That's one way to put it.
No, the camera's on when you unlock.
When it's locked.
When you wake up.
And it probably has proximity also. Yeah, so when it's no longer in a pocket,
yeah,
it starts looking at you. Because they said most people are looking at their notifications for a little while before they unlock it. So it's gonna try to get a little head start on recognizing you.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
And so what I do, in my case, like, I forget that I even set that up, right? I just am used to entering in my PIN code. And then every once in a while, I don't have to. That's because it recognized my face and it brings me right
But through. you could still have the PIN code.
Yeah.
There'll be notifications in your lock screen, richer notifications than before in your lock screen. Including, for instance, now you have to turn this on because you may not want to do this with a lock screen on, but you could respond to email. You could, do other stuff with the notifications without unlocking. Although you can apparently do a redaction if you wish for some apps so that people don't see, you know, your emails and stuff. Mm-hmm. There's a something called priority mode, which lets you set what apps can disturb you and what can't. Yeah. So instead of do not disturb on an iPhone, when you turn on do not disturb, just nothing happens. Mm-hmm. Right? But now you could say, well, you can wake me up, but not you.
Yeah.
You can make noise, but not you. This I like. There's a guest mode.
Ah, good.
Mm-hmm.
So Android introduced last with KitKat the idea of multiple users, right? So
you could log for tablets. In. You could have profiles for tablets.
So now you can have, just as you do on a Chromebook, a guest mode. And you have it on the Mac, too, where you don't have to give somebody your login. You just give them your login. You give them the phone. They go into guest mode. They can do stuff that's erased when they log out.
I just want to be able, maybe, Jason, you know this. I just want to be able to give somebody a phone. So here, look at this great picture I took of my kid.
Yes.
Give them the phone and not have them.
They have that.
They do. Good.
It's called pinning. It's good for Leo, too. Because you can open a game, for instance, say, Leo, you can play this game, but he can't exit. Or you could have the photo up, and he can't exit. Mm-hmm. So you'd have to enter a passcode. I think these are all nice features. And, of course, then the biggest one that everybody will notice is this new flat card-focused material design.
Yeah, it really does look good.
But only Jason's going to get it because he got the only Nexus 6 on
Not
the market.
True. Very soon after.
Do we know anyone else who got a Nexus 6?
No.
No. Yeah. Nobody. Anybody in the chat room? Any of you? I don't know. Jason's the only person in the world who got a Nexus 6. I think that's true.
That's why they sold out so quickly.
I'm glad I know you,
under
sir.
A second.
Believe me, I tried to get more than one, but I can only get one. So.
Anyway, exciting. Yeah. All right, let's take a break. We've got more to talk about. We're learning more about Windows 10. And there's some new... I want to talk a little bit about fitness watches, because I know you can't talk about that one.
And I can't... Well, a little. They told me I could talk about it a little.
He's wearing an NDA'd product on his... Oh, he showed it. Rafe Needleman's here from the fabulous Yahoo Tech page, which, by the way, looks good.
Thank you.
I don't know if it reads
reading
well,
it too.
But okay. No, it does reads really well.
Yeah,
David Pogue, of course, is your lead there and is doing his traditional videos.
Our anchor, yeah,
doing a great job. Anchor, is that what you call him?
That's what I call him. Yeah,
yeah.
Spiritual leader.
Here's Christian Bale and Seth Rogen. So we found out, by the way, this week that we knew Christian Bale would play Steve Jobs. Somebody in your office has photoshopped.
No. We got that photoshopped from somebody else's office.
You know, that's good. Christian Bale's perfect for Steve Jobs. He's got the intensity. He's got the look. He looks kind of like him. But he also, you feel like he could blow up just like Jobs at any moment.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he has. And I think Rogan is very much like Wozniak. He's cuddly.
Yep.
He's lovable. I actually wrote to Steve and said, what do you think? Well, I wrote to his wife. Steve speaks to me through his wife. Janet Wozniak, and she said, Steve's excited. Steve thinks Seth is a good choice. He was less than...
This makes three Jobs movies.
I know two.
Well, this is the third, right?
What's the other one? I know there was that bad one.
There was the bad one.
And Steve hated that, by the way.
Then there was the other one. I can't remember their names anymore.
There was another Jobs movie?
Well, there was Fire in the Valley, and then there was...
Oh, that's a real old one.
Yeah, real old one.
And the Revenge of the... not Revenge of the Nerds, the Empire of the Mind. Empire of the Nerds.
Mm. Pirates of Silicon Valley.
Pirates is whatever it was. The one with...
Pirates of Silicon Valley.
He was... Noah Wiley was Steve Jobs. He was the best Jobs, but he's too old now.
Mm-hmm.
Noah Wiley was a very good Steve Jobs, I thought. Okay, so yeah, if you include that, there have been others. The Ashton Kutcher movie, Mr. Wozniak hated and was offended.
I couldn't watch it.
I went and saw it in the theater. It was terrible. But Woz was offended because for some reason the makers of the movie, Ashton Kutcher, I guess, decided that it would be Steve Jobs who had the vision that the Apple II, the people would want a computer, and he had to convince Woz that it was worth doing.
Hmm.
And of course, everyone knows it was not. It was Woz who had the vision. You know, he knew what he was doing. He wanted a computer. Everybody knew wanted a computer. I think this looks good with Rogan, the newly slimmed down Seth Rogan as Woz. And I think he has that cuddle factor. Woz is cuddly.
Yeah.
Woz is the anti-Jobs. Woz is like you. Woz doesn't like to say no. I mean, I know Woz pretty well.
Yeah.
He's just, he'll say yes to anything.
Hmm.
I could see him in that role. I don't know.
Hmm.
Anyway, I got distracted by the fabulous Yahoo Tech page.
See, there you go.
You see how easy it
is?
We
know what people like.
You get right in there. Tech.yahoo.com also here. Chris Breen from MacWorld.com. He does the Mac 911 column and a lot more. Oh, look here, the review of Sunset Overdrive. I love that game.
I haven't tried it yet.
Oh,
a reviewer loved
it.
So
good. It's the new Xbox One game.
Yeah.
It's funny. It's great.
I don't own a console. I'm afraid.
Because Leo. You don't want Leo to get sucked into it.
Yeah, I don't want my kid to like get... I'd never see him again.
Yeah.
Already, I hardly ever see him.
He plays Minecraft like crazy, huh?
Minecraft, Scratch, and now Python programming.
So Scratch is good. Oh, gosh, I hate it when the kids, you know, that's terrible. They get sucked into Python, and you never see them again. I hate it when
I just want him to send me royalty checks. I'll be happy.
If only my kid would have gotten sucked into. That's what I told my kid. I said, look, this is my retirement plan. Would you please become a hacker?
Exactly.
No. But I have to say, Henry did have all the consoles because I wanted them.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't become a, you know, video game nerd. He likes them.
Yeah.
It's part of the culture of... of his generation to play these games.
Well, we're going to get one.
He's busy enough, though. He's got a lot.
He's eight.
We talked to him before the show, and he's really smart kid. Very, very smart kid. Plays the piano. He's programming. He's a Minecraft whiz. He says, I want to do a Minecraft add-on where the rails could go upside down. Are you going to help him with that?
He's beyond me.
I said, what language is that? And he said, well, I think it's JavaScript. I'm not sure. I am learning Python. Eight.
Last night he was like hunched over. He had the computer and he had the book. And he was like,
that's so awesome.
I didn't do that till I was 14.
Yeah. No, you know? Eight's pretty young.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
smart kid. Don't let him play Sunset Overdrive.
So I'll never see him again.
You'll never see him again.
He gets hooked.
Such a good game. All right.
No, I got to go play it.
Well, I'm only going to play it for a little while because, you know, Halo Master Chief Edition is out soon.
Isn't that just old Halo repoxed?
It's all the Halos.
Oh, okay.
It's every map. It's like 100 gigabytes. I pre-ordered it. It'll download it. It's downloading right. It's been downloading for weeks. Our show today brought to you Carbonite Online Backup. Do not back up Halo on Carbonite because that's not a good idea. Back up the stuff you did that only you have access to. That's the beauty of Carbonite. Everybody's got something on their computer that they cannot replace, whether it's pictures of the kid, your Python scripts, your financial records. It's so valuable. And the problem is hard drives are such a tenuous thing to store it on. We feel like, oh, they're so reliable, but you know they will break. And if you're relying on a hard drive in your business, you're really taking a chance. Carbonite's the solution. Whether you have one computer at home, several at your small business, if you have external drives, network-attached storage, Carbonite has a solution for you. Automatic and continuous backup to the cloud. And you can access your files anytime, anywhere with their apps. You can log on to your Carbonite account on any computer. No wonder 50,000 businesses use Carbonite now. And at home, Carbonite's awesome. Here's the deal. You could try it right now at Carbonite.com. There's the workstation plans, the pro plans. You'll see all the different plans. Pick a plan. You can try it free and use our offer code TWIT when you do. They'll ask you, what was the offer code? You say TWIT because then when you buy, you get two extra months. You pay by the year or 2 years or 3 years. That's nice because you don't have to think about it. You just buy it and it's done. They never meter your how much data. They also have advanced plans for businesses that include a Carbonite appliance that does local and cloud backup. They have lots of really good solutions. Carbonite.com. No credit card required for that free trial. And do use the offer code TWIT because that way you get 2 months free when you buy. We had a good week on TWIT this week. Do you have the cut down? We did a little thing.
I believe I do.
A little kind of, this is what you might have missed if you missed anything this week on TWIT.
Let's check it out.
Yeah. Previously on TWIT.
We're going to look at terrifying tech.
Oh, my word.
Jed.
You're a monster.
I don't like the way this smells.
Before you buy.
We have sitting right here the new iMac that Apple announced a couple of weeks ago. This is the 5K iMac.
Tech news today.
Current C, which is the alternative to Apple Pay and Google Wallet being foisted on retail store customers, has already been hacked.
Coding 101.
All you artists out there who are doing things with Arduinos, you're writing C code. That's awesome.
TWIT, making the world safe for technology.
Yeah. I'm glad to see you dressed up, too, though.
I see that Alex didn't wear a costume today.
He never gets in the spirit of Halloween.
Yeah, I know.
Alex, the red shirt Gumple, we call him. He's gone. That was it. We left him on the planet? We are talking TWIT. We are talking tech. Chris Breen, MacWorld.com from Yahoo Tech. My old friend Rafe Needleman. Did you set your clocks? Did you remember to set your clocks back or forward or whatever the hell we're supposed to do?
Every year I have fewer and fewer clocks that have to be set manually.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah. I wake up, my clock, my bedside clock knows what time it is. The hall clock knows what time it is.
It's the oven. The oven.
There's a microwave which has a broken one key, so I have to wait until there's a time without a one in it until I can set it. Other than that, it's all automatic. Yeah.
And I live with somebody who's a little bit finicky, and if the clock and the microwave and the oven don't match, that's a problem.
It's the worst. Yeah, you have to be within like arm's reach of each other so you can go beep, set them at the same time.
You know what frustrates me? I buy radio clocks because I want everything.
The atomic clocks.
But you have to put them outside sometimes. They don't sense the change.
Right.
So I have to put them.
True change comes from within.
Not in these things. Okay. You put them on the deck. Let them and sit them for a day. I want to begin right here. Now's the time to end daylight savings time forever.
Saving.
Time forever. Yeah, you'll be in trouble. You say savings.
I know. I got a guy who works with me. He comes
or
over
move
and hits
to Arizona.
Me. They're smart. They got rid of it.
Or Hawaii.
Or Hawaii.
So that's even more confusing because it's adhered to by some and not by all.
Right.
We know now that daylight saving time saves no energy because in Indiana, where they adopted it in bits and pieces, you could see and you can actually say it was a net zero change because it turns out, yes, people use lights less, but they use their air conditioner more because they're up more in the warm weather. So it ended up being a net zero. They also so that was one argument, saves energy. No, it doesn't.
It's better for farmers.
No. Great article kidding. In the National Geographic last year. I'm going to point.
But this goes back to the Ben Franklin era, doesn't it?
No! That's another canard. It's full of canards.
So when did this start?
1940s.
No.
Yes! So Franklin talked about it as a joke.
Because Franklin didn't die until 1952.
Right. Yeah. He's often invoked in this thing, like, oh, it was invented by Ben Franklin. But it wasn't implemented until the war. It was a World War II attempt to save. There's actually a book by, this is the National Geographic article from a year ago, but there's a book by a professor at Tufts called Spring Forward, The Annual Madness of Daylight Saving Time. He points out no energy savings. Farmers, in fact, were so against it, they were the only group to actively lobby against it. Farmers don't want it. You know who likes, and it's, by the way, hazardous to your health. A 2012 study by the University of Alabama at Birmingham found the risk of heart attack surges 10% on the Monday and Tuesday after we turn the clocks ahead.
Because you're rushing to work and you suddenly keel over.
And there are many more accidents. I mean, we know that also. I don't know why there's more heart attacks. It's because your circadian rhythm's screwed up.
Or you're late for a meeting and you're running around. It's like, oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Sleep deprivation, the body's circadian clock, and the immune responses all come into play when consider reasons that changing the time by an hour is detrimental to your health. New England Journal of Medicine showed that in Sweden, heart attack risk rose just after the springtime change. They think it has to do with disturbed sleep or maybe just running around like crazy. You're tired. You're jet-lagged. Why are we inflicting this on each other? You know who benefits? The U.S. barbecue industry. They say the month when you set the clocks ahead, they make $150 million more. And the golf industry estimated that an extra month of daylight savings time was worth $200 to $400 million because more golfers are out there. And gas stations, because we drive around more. Another reason it doesn't save energy. So
there are powerful forces of evil allied against the sense of what is right and good.
Paying
in the
off
world.
Congress.
Okay. So what else is new?
The TV industry. If you look at Nielsen ratings during the first week of daylight saving, no matter when it is, even the most popular shows go down 10 to 15% because everybody's playing golf.
And barbecuing.
And barbecuing while they're playing golf. It's an annual cost of $1.7 billion, according to a Utah State University economist. So let's stop it. Let's just stop the insanity. We have now three or four months to lobby before we have to turn the clocks forward again. Or just move to Arizona. Arizona, except for residents of the Navajo Nation. They decided they wanted to.
Seriously.
Yes. Hawaii, Puerto Rico, the Virgin Islands, American Samoa, Guam, and the Northern Marianas Islands don't do it.
What about Russia?
Hey, if I were a dictator, if Russia has daylight saving time, there's no hope. If I were a dictator, I'd just eliminate it.
The chat room will know because I thought I heard something.
No, time changes you in Russia.
In Russia, time changes you. There's no excuse for it. I'm sorry, I got on a tangent there.
But what about time claws in the spring, though? Because I know that as a kid, you know, daylight is going to, you're going to get a brighter sky the next day, and you're waiting for time claws to come along with this big sack of clocks and
time
then come
claws
down the chimney.
That sounds like something made up by the golf industry.
No. Time claws, you didn't sit around and roast little watches over the fire waiting for time claws to
welcome
show
welcome to time claws. All right, let's talk. Since we're talking fitness, let's talk about watches and fitness. There is a new Fitbit coming. I guess you must be into this because you're wearing this new Basis. I had the original Basis.
Yeah,
I liked it.
This is their next one.
It was about the smartest watch out there, I think.
It looks pretty hideous. But
as did the old one. It's very functional.
But it actually doesn't look like it's trying to be something it's not.
This is Intel bought them, right?
Yeah. Intel bought this company. And it does steps. And the cool thing about it is it does heart rate, which they all do now. It's kind of a standard feature. But
yeah,
the
Moto 360 does heart rate. Not well.
It has the thing on the back that...
Does it do heart... Oh, look, it's
trying pulsing. To measure my heart rate right
does
now.
Does it do heart rate... when you're exercising?
It does heart rate continuously.
Okay, because a lot of these...
App, and it'll show you your heart rate over the day.
Okay, so that's an improvement.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them say you have to stand still and don't make any noise.
No.
No.
That never happens.
I know. What good is that?
No, it measures heart rate all the time. The battery's supposed to last for 4 days. The Bluetooth stuff isn't turned on yet, so it's not giving me all my alerts, but it does sync to the phone.
Oh, so you do have some notifications.
No, I'm not getting any notifications.
But you would.
Theoretically. That's coming. Yeah, we'll see.
How much?
I don't know.
Unannounced?
200, 300, around there. The problem is that the other companies like Fitbit and Apple, they're all about the same price range, and they seem to have more design chops.
Well, Apple certainly.
Yeah.
Although, the same price range necessarily.
Here's the thing that gets me about all these things. They're looking for a reason to be.
Right.
So and they're all pushing health because that's what they can actually do for you that a regular watch can't.
Right.
And they all want to also measure your sleep.
Right.
Which is a double problem because who wants to wear a watch at night
Well, the funny thing
and
is...
And you got to charge them all the time.
Apple apparently has put into its Apple Watch, you know, it has the taptic feedback where just it does... I've been told it doesn't actually buzz. It's just like somebody's actually tapping you, poking you.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Thanks. So they have a taptic feedback alarm that'll wake you up.
Okay.
But we also know that the iWatch won't get through, Apple Watch won't get through a day without charging.
Right.
So what good is that?
You buy two.
This is
your
my
night watch.
Watch.
And your day watch. Yeah.
That's useless.
But it's the tap thing is actually unbelievably cool. I haven't
have
seen
you felt it.
No. But the thing about it that I like is the integration with maps. Did you hear about that?
No.
Where if you have walking directions to somewhere,
It'll say left.
It will tap. Left. It'll tap you differently for go left, go straight, go right.
That's neat.
So you come to an intersection, it goes beep beep. Oh, that means go left.
See, that is one use for. I have the Moto 360, and I've tried a bunch of them, including the old Basis.
Yeah.
This is the one I've stuck with the longest, and that was one really good use for this. Was you can do okay, Google, you know, take me to the airport. Well, actually, this was for walking around London. Mm-hmm. So take me to the Tower of London, and it would put the map on the watch face.
Mm-hmm.
It would take your next turn would be on the watch face, and it would buzz when it was time to change direction.
Oh, cool! Yes.
But it didn't go left, right. It would just buzz, and you have to look. Mm-hmm. But I thought that worked really well. That was a good use for this.
So you have that set so it automatically comes on when you do that.
That's a disadvantage in a way is that these don't, they're not like a real watch where they're always on.
This one's always on. I will say that.
Yeah. But because it looks crappy.
It does look pretty crappy.
So it's
but it's always crappy. It's not intermittently crappy.
This looks good, but it's only, and you can make this look like a Rolex. There's all sorts of faces out there for this. Anyway, Fitbit has some new ones. They really have kind of owned this market because they were the first. I remember when they were, was it a Kickstarter? They were it was some sort of crowdfunded thing.
Fitbit?
Maybe not. No?
Fitbit, I remember when they announced at a either a TechCrunch or a launch conference.
Maybe that was it. It was just a startup.
Ages ago.
And nobody had really had this idea yet. I mean, it was a pedometer, let's face it.
It was something you put on your pants.
It was a clip.
Yeah.
You have lost many of them.
Mm-hmm.
Many, many.
Brilliant design.
Yeah. Falls off that instantly.
Lasts a day.
San Diego Zoo has one of my Fitbits.
You're right.
One's in Paris. Good place to lose a Fitbit. One's in the toilet. But they fall off. They fall off really easily. Anyway, they've gone to the band because that doesn't fall off. Their newest ones have been announced. The Fitbit Charge HR and the Surge. They all do the same thing with the heart rate tracking. Mm-hmm. And as a result, they're kind of bulky. These will be out early next year. This is a replacement for the Force, which was pulled back because it had nickel in it and made people itchy. So this is
that was a PR disaster.
It was
a Fitbit.
But Jawbone, remember the Jawbone Up? What a PR disaster that was! It basically they took them all back.
Wait. Which one was the one? See, by association.
Well, this
Jawbone
they had,
was the one that had the irritated people, right?
No. The Fitbit Flex is the one that, the Force was the one that
Jawbone
irritated
broke.
People. Jawbone just didn't work.
Right. Okay.
Work. This has been a problematic
category. It's one of those
category.
Harder than it looks categories.
I think everybody's trying to get these out now before the Apple Watch comes out.
Yeah.
This has that same heart rate monitor. It's probably the same company that makes it that blinks. So that's all the time. So you would get a graph at the end of the day that would show how your heart rate
went.
Oh, that's cool. That's useful.
Shows you how out of shape you are all the time.
Right.
I need that.
Seems like this is kind of like a new PDA category. The idea being that these are these single-use devices.
Yeah.
And that once we do get something like the Apple Watch that's not only a terminal for your iPhone, but also acts as a trigger for HomeKit and a controller for your Apple TV and the various things that it's going to do, these other things are going to seem like single-purpose wannabes and like, well, why would we need that anymore? Let's just get this one device that does everything, and then we'll get another one the next year because, of course, it'll do new magical things. And I feel sorry for the people who get the gold ones who are going to spend I don't know how many thousands of dollars and find out, oh, you mean there's one that's thinner and it doesn't require an iPhone.
The Apple says we're going to do a drop-in replacement.
I was wondering if they were going to do that and do some kind of rebate.
Well, if you spend
$6,000
and that's what the rough estimates are, even at six, we talked about this last week. At $6,000, a gold watch would be a good deal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. So even at $6,000, if it's obsolete next year, that's not good. So the thinking is maybe Apple will have a subscription, some sort of upgrade.
A subscription service?
Yeah. Microsoft's in this business. Paul Theroux got his Microsoft banned. He says, even after less than a day of use, it's pretty clear the Microsoft band is big, bulky, uncomfortable, and complex enough to dissuade many from using it. It's a perfect Microsoft product. He does say there's magic here. You've got Microsoft Health Services, which he says are more comprehensive than the Health Kit or Google's health service thing. But the band itself, and I've heard others say this, is just kind of uncomfortably bulky.
All of them are.
None of them are great.
No, the thing is, for the heart rate thing to work, it has to be pressed against your skin.
Right, that's why.
Yeah, so thank goodness
this is
thing.
Flat. It's not curved. You could see in the picture on the
yeah, it's like the first
site.
The first square Google watches.
Right.
Even though they're pretty much the same size as the round one you have, they just don't sit well.
He says it's like wearing handcuffs, and you're always aware the device is there. It does have a very nice screen, which does a lot, including notifications, of course. It's not just a fitness band. It does have sleep monitoring. He says the results were not inspiring because I felt like I slept well, but according to the band, I only got 4.5 hours of sleep, one of which was restful. That's bad. When the band tells you that you had a crappy night's sleep, you thought you felt fine until you saw that.
No, it just sends up an alert that says, get a CPAP.
You snored all night. You kept me up, says the
all night.
Somebody in Feld in the chat room says the new name of this is the Microsoft Shackle. It does look like you're under house arrest a little bit.
It put it around your ankle.
Wow.
Actually, you could wear that around the ankle for monitoring. It wouldn't be quite so obtrusive.
I actually have done that with my Fitbit because I all of these have one big failing is that they measure walking and running, but no other form of exercise. Mm-hmm. So you work out. I row and I work out for hours rowing. And it says you didn't do anything today. So I start putting it on my ankle. Doesn't help. Bicycling, same thing, doesn't help. They don't.
They should know bicycling.
They should know bicycling.
Especially the new ones, like the high end of the Fitbit watch, it has GPS.
Right.
So it knows how fast you're moving. And bicycling exists in a narrow range between walking and driving. So it should know.
Oh, yeah. A little GPS action would tell you.
Yeah.
Some of these have GPSs. Most of them don't because that's a real battery killer.
Right. But that's the new thing. I mean, the Timex has one that has GPS and a cellular radio.
Yeah. And it looks, by the way, it looks like it has GPS and a cellular radio. It looks like it was invented by the Soviets in 1958.
I'm going to do a sci-fi movie, and that's going to be the communicator.
Yeah.
It just looks like it. The Will.i.am one has a...
The Will.i.am one. Okay, come on. Really? Is that a contender?
It's a statement. I'll say that. It's huge.
We got to get an image of the Will.i.am watch.
We interviewed Will.i.am.
I thought this was a joke.
No, he's serious. This guy, Will.i.am, is a really interesting, different guy as a tech entrepreneur. He keeps throwing stuff against the wall. And he knows.
But he's a smart guy.
He's really
smart.
So
he says,
really
don't call it a watch. Will.i.am, you should know. He's the front man for Black Eyed Peas. He's great. He's a great rapper. Great performer, great musician. It's called the Pulse or
the,
Pulse?
The
P-U-L-S.
Yeah.
Pulse. Here's Will.i.am with a CNET. He's also wearing a backpack, so that makes him a fashion accessory. What the hell is he wearing? Is that a tennis racket? What is he wearing on his back?
Jetpack.
This is the...
I'm telling you, he's a smart guy.
I think it's not a watch. Thing.
So... And it's not a smartwatch.
It's a whole new thing.
It's a new paradigm, a new category called a pulse. Over here, your notifications are here. Mm-hmm. Your navigation is here.
Oh, okay.
So you just got to imagine you have three things here.
I like it that some people are trying stuff, right?
Oh, yeah. Simple.
I mean, we have a long way to go before this stuff is useful.
Up and down are your
but he's trying so stuff.
Travel from here, you get your little in-app menu.
Can you buy this?
Some cool features like
Vibe. I don't know if it's available yet.
Yeah. This is Brian Tong at CNET interviewing Will.i.am on the watch.
If you choose to, your call.
So there's everybody and their brother. I like this one. This is the new one from HP. They got a designer to do this one, Michael Bastien. Let me show you this one here. It actually looks like a watch. It's called the MB Chrono Wing. An alligator strap for $650. Sapphire crystal. Anybody?
So this one puts the little has a little watch insert and a little...
But that's an LCD screen. Don't be fooled.
The whole thing is LCD.
Yes. Because
every picture I've seen of this watch has the watch insert in the same exact space.
You can't get rid of it. It has does not have a touch screen. It's just buttons and notifications. Lots of buttons.
I like buttons.
Yeah. I don't know. At least it looks like a watch.
This is so cool. I mean, everybody's trying different design ideas.
That's what I like.
And the watch manufacturers are getting involved. The fashion people are getting involved. The fitness people are getting involved. And it's all this battle for the wrist top battle.
Right. This cannot track your steps. This cannot measure your heart rate. This does not beep. It has no touch screen. It has no microphone.
Perfect.
But it tells time beautifully.
It does tell time. Yeah, and then you know what? You credit with all of this innovation to the Apple rumor mill, because all of these things were created before Apple announced an Apple Watch, but on the basis of a rumor that Apple would be doing a watch. And everybody said, scurry, scurry, hurry, hurry, get to this market before Apple does.
Still won't matter. I mean, Apple's...
Yes, exactly. Not that it's going to help very much. That's when
Apple will sell them. Apple not only... Sorry.
No, I was just saying, you're right. When Apple comes out, everything else will disappear or will be also ran, and they'll just discount things highly.
I'm not convinced,
then people
though,
see
that
what
Apple's
done. And then, I mean,
I'm not convinced Apple's got it either.
Though. No. I think I am very excited about the version 2 Apple Watch.
Yeah.
The things, the battery life is no good. They're bulky. The UI is first gen on almost all the products. But I kind of like the idea, you know, of this stuff working. But this stuff is too bulky and itchy. I don't like itchy products.
You wouldn't have liked my Halloween costume. It's very itchy. HP is going to do a 3D printer next year. That's kind of interesting to get a big company like HP into this. They say it is not going to be a hobbyist printer. It'll be targeted at business. Kind of like the big HP printers, you know, that the people use for plotting and big prints and stuff to make billboards and posters. It will be designed to produce a wide range of functional objects and industrial components. So this is interesting. HP, I think you can fairly credit with the inkjet explosion, by which I do not mean the actual explosion of inkjet materials.
Sounds like an OK Go song.
Although that has happened. But the fact that the sudden growth of the inkjet industry is really was driven initially, I think, by HP.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be interesting.
Well, you kind of wonder though if they had a big meeting at HP and said, "Well, what do we still do? Well, we don't do medical equipment anymore, and we don't do this and that. Oh, we still make printers. So, what's cutting edge in printers?
Right.
3D printing. All right, let's do that because I'm not sure what else HP has got going for it. Yeah, I mean, the server stuff is still happening, but they've pared down what they used to do to such an extent that I think they need some kind of product that's going to step forward and say, no, we're still in the game, and this is what we're going to do now to keep us going.
HP can't not do 3D printers.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah. I don't know how big the market is.
Can Epson not do 3D printers?
I think everybody's going to be doing 3D printers. There will be some standardized technology that already is.
Yeah.
But the price of the print heads will come down. The price of the epoxy or whatever, the plastic, will go way up, right? So everybody's going to make money selling things. Now they're going to have to convince us that we actually need to print stuff in 3D. I mean, when was the last time at your house you needed to make a
knob?
Yeah.
That's what everybody always says. Oh, my knob fell off and I made one. That's always the thing.
Right. So it takes what, how long right now? Like half like an hour or an hour to make a knob.
Make kind of a crappy looking plastic knob.
Which you then still have to sand. And the first one comes out wrong.
They say HP will support Shapeways, which I guess is the closest thing to a standard. That's the 3D data, the 3D model database. So that's good. Amazon figured out what's wrong with the Fire Phone. So relieved. They said, we just priced it wrong.
Yeah, you know.
That's what they picked.
That's what's wrong.
Yeah, that is not what's wrong.
No.
I went to
You could give me $50, I wouldn't take it.
well, then they still priced it wrong because they should give you 100. No, they've been trying to socialize this idea about the, oh, we just priced it wrong as the reason the phone flopped. I was at an event and some Amazon person told me this. I was like, okay, sure, whatever you say. No, this is what Amazon did was they underestimated the importance of standards. And yes, that it runs a forked version of Android. And yes, it has its own app store. But people just want a phone that exists in an ecosystem that they know is robust.
They could have looked at Windows and the Windows phone and realized that that's the case.
Now, Windows
actually, phones are great.
And they're beginning to make headway. But it's taken years for Microsoft to push that phone out, to drive the prices down, and to really cozy up to developers to get the apps out there. And the Windows phone is actually unique. The Windows, it's got a really innovative and beautiful UI. It's different from the Android.
And it still was too late and wasn't part of an ecosystem that was either Android or iOS.
Yeah. I am not counting out Windows phones now only because I see them now everywhere I go.
Do you really?
I do. And that's weird to me because for the first couple of years, you never saw a Windows phone. But now they're beginning to pop up.
Well, I'd like to see that. Yeah. We could use a third.
Yeah.
And I was a little hopeful that Fire OS would make a fourth, but it isn't. It's not. It's not enough. Amazon did also announce this week the Fire TV Stick, which is an excellent name.
Fire Stick.
And, this one they've priced right. It's not out yet. It'll be out before Christmas. $39 for briefly. You could get it for $19 if you were a Prime member.
Yeah, they sold out of those really fast.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did you get one?
No. Mm. I have a Fire TV and I haven't hooked it up yet. Uh-huh. So I don't know what I need a stick for. It's the same as the Fire TV.
$20. It's a great stocking stuffer.
It is a good. Well, what would you get? Chromecast or a Fire TV stick?
Roku.
Roku makes a stick too.
Right.
But it's more expensive. It's like $50. So yeah, much. Roku. You're right. Why even bother? I do like the Chromecast.
I don't have a Chromecast yet. Now, and what's interesting is that Google is now putting a lot of that Chromecast stuff on other platforms, like on the Roku.
Isn't that interesting?
So the thing is, this whole battle is not about the hardware. It's about the...
What is it about?
It's about the streaming services. And if you're Amazon, you want people to use Amazon Prime, Amazon Video.
Right.
If you're Roku, well, you sell the hardware. If you're Google, it's Google Play. But everybody's got to support everybody else because that's the way the world is right now. And I don't know whether there are if you have to pay Netflix to a couple of pennies to stream a video onto a Roku or something.
I wouldn't
like that.
Think so. I mean, wouldn't Netflix want to be just everywhere? Why would I?
Netflix wants to be everywhere. So all these guys are trying to be on every platform. So it's
Netflix
not about,
is
it's
the
not
only
about,
one that is.
It's not about the hardware. Yeah. Well, actually, you know, Hulu Plus is almost everywhere. Spotify and Pandora are getting there. Amazon Video is pretty much everywhere. Amazon Prime Video is almost anywhere.
Except
Apple TV.
Oh, right. Of course. Oh, and Apple TV. Yeah, I don't know where they are.
Well, the Apple has the iTunes store, and they're exclusive on Apple TV. And
I think part of the advantage of this Fire Stick is that Apple TV owners are going to want it because I've got Amazon Prime, but I can't get it on my Apple TV. I have a Roku box, but it's sort of
way to put Amazon Prime.
Mm-hmm.
Just throw it on there for $20 or $30.
That makes sense. Do you think the television companies can end the pain by just putting this stuff into the TV?
No, come on. Have you seen Samsung software, LG software?
I use it. It's horrible. It's a nightmare.
I forget what my TV is. It's LG. And it actually does almost all this stuff, except the interface is so terrible.
Not well.
Yeah. The same is true with my receiver. No, I mean, Roku, Google, Amazon, Apple, they know how to make software.
Not the TV companies.
No. But, I mean, I kick myself every time I'm reminded that I paid extra to have all these smart TV features. All I need is a monitor.
Yeah.
That's it.
You don't even need a tuner anymore.
No. Cable TV.
You're right. All you need is a screen with a bunch of, it would be nice to have a bunch of HDMI inputs.
Yeah.
I have, so Panasonic's not bad. It's okay. It's usable.
But why? It does, probably does. I mean.
It doesn't do all this stuff.
The set-top boxes or the sticks do more, so why switch between them?
Nothing's worse than Samsung's smart TV, though.
Really? That's I haven't tried that one.
Horrible. Horrible platform. It's the Fire Phone of TVs.
That's Fire Phone is actually that UI with the fake 3D.
Yeah, you like that?
It's let me qualify that. It's really cool.
It's interesting.
It's no reason at all to buy a phone right. because it's just glitzy.
It doesn't do anything of value at all.
It would.
Even Firefly doesn't, really.
The maps are neat, and you could do, because you can look under things.
Spent a lot of time doing this. You
know, and it has potential for games, but unless people actually buy the phone, nobody's going to write a game that uses it. So, no.
LG is killing, the last company to make plasma TVs has decided to go out of the plasma business, so that's it.
That's sad.
It is over for what everybody agreed was the best TV technology out there.
The LP of TV technology.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Panasonic, which made those great Vieiras, that's the one I have. Those were great plasma TVs. Many agreed the best TVs made. Nope. Samsung, nope. And finally, LG, the last company making plasma. But, you know, I think OLED is probably taken over for that.
Yeah, but OLED's still pricey,
it's
right?
It's very expensive still, yeah.
Yeah, I still have two plasmas, and I absolutely love the things.
Yeah, don't get rid of them. Yeah.
No, I'm not going to, but trying to get one of them broke and trying to get parts of the thing is really hard. And this was a Panasonic from just about 3 years ago. And it's I waited 6 weeks to get a part for the thing, and they had to take it out of another one that had broken. So they don't, you know, like Apple with the parts for the iPod Classic, they do not have a lot on the shelves. So you're going to have a hard time if the thing busts.
I have the last plasma right here. You can have it. Our show today brought to you by Audible.com. Audiobooks from Audible are the best way to spend time in the car, at the gym, walking the dog, doing the dishes. You're reading. People hate it when I use the word reading, but every word that's on the page is going into your ears. You're experiencing the book in a way that is unique. I am a fanatic, and I think you know that I've been an Audible subscriber since the year 2000. I have over 500 books in my library, and I encourage everybody to give it a try. The new Amy Poehler first book is out, Yes, Please. It's from Saturday Night Live cast member Amy Poehler, star of Parks and Rec. She reads it. So that's, you know, there's a plus there when you hear her voice. Actually, it's not just her. Carol Burnett, Seth Meyers, mom and dad, Eileen and William Poehler. Patrick Stewart is in this book. Kathleen Turner. I wonder if this will be
written. The truth is, writing is hard and boring and occasionally great, but usually not. Even I have lied about writing. I've told people that writing this book has been like brushing away dirt from a fossil. What a load of dish. It's been
like hacking. Amy Poehler, the book is Yes, Please. How would you like to get this? And another book free. Rachel Dratch has a new book. Neil Patrick Harris, I'm hearing very good things about his new biography, Choose Your Own Autobiography. It's actually adapted from the printed edition by the author. So because this book was weird where you would jump from different, you would literally, like one of those choose your own games, they've made it work in Audible somehow. Hmm. I love Neil Patrick Harris. Give it a try. Visit audible.com, pick two books, and then go to audible.com/twit2. You're going to sign up for the Platinum account. That's a two-book-a-month subscription plan. And I think that's what I have. I listen to two books a month. Easy. And you get the Daily Digest of the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, so you get to keep up on what's going on in the world. Audible is so much fun. I'm listening to Whiskey Tango Foxtrot right now, which is a great techno thriller. For people who are worried about the NSA, it confirms every fear that you might have, and then some. And it's funny. Pick a book. Pick two books. Go to audible.com/twit2. Sign up for the Platinum account. You won't pay anything for the first 30 days. In fact, if you cancel in the first 30 days, no problem. You pay nothing, but you get to keep those books forever. So that's nice. We love it. audible.com/twit2. I should probably read this. This is Olive Kittredge. This is the new HBO miniseries that's coming out Monday and Tuesday, a Pulitzer Prize winning novel. And I like to read the books before I see the movies. I still haven't seen Gone Girl because I haven't finished the book yet. I want the book to be the spoiler, not the movie. That's how much I love Audible. Audible.com/twit2. Give it a try. Today. Chris Breen, Rafe Needleman. We're talking high tech. Verizon, and now I think AT&T have been caught setting perma cookies. A Wired magazine calls it a privacy killing machine. Yep. This has been going on for 2 years. If you use a Verizon phone and you surf using your browser on any phone, a unique identifier will be sent to the website that advertisers can use to identify you. I presume Verizon can use it in some way. Jacob Hoffman Andrews at the Electronic Frontier Foundation said, ISPs, and in this case Verizon would be your ISP, are trusted connectors of users. They shouldn't be modifying our traffic on the way to the internet. But now we know that AT&T is doing it too, and I wouldn't be surprised if all the carriers are doing it, and maybe even your internet service provider.
Yeah, it's not what we expected.
That's exactly what I expected. Yeah. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, good point. It's very sad.
Yeah.
So what they're doing is they're taking your calls to the internet, your request to this page, and just adding a little identifier that's not just your IP, but a machine identifier.
Right.
Yeah.
Now it's not like they're giving information to these guys, but every time you go to this page, they see it's you again.
Right. Well, you start to correlate that with all the places that you have been.
That's right.
And you put that in, and so the ad serving, the ad services can, they're the people who actually link all the stuff together.
Right.
The Google and the Yahoo, that's what the ad companies do.
Right.
And they know who you are for all the different places you've been through these cross-site cookies. And this is just makes their job so much easier.
According to Verizon, there's no way to turn it off. She says, the Verizon spokesman, Deborah Lewis, says, Verizon doesn't use this UIDH to create customer profiles. Oh, good news.
Oh, it's just fine. Why do they have it then? What's the point of this if it's not to sell us to our advertising friends?
Well, the funny thing is, even if Verizon isn't taking advantage of it, there's nothing to stop any other ad network from taking advantage of it. In effect, they're doing this, for the good of the advertising agencies. I mean, everybody benefits. You're right. I think ultimately Verizon wants to, but the irony is, even if Verizon doesn't, anybody else.
Why would they do it? Well, because they can.
Because they can. It's easy.
Because they can, and it's easier to do it than not do it if you're a company like Verizon.
We spend a lot of time talking about worried about the NSA and worried about Google and Facebook, but I always want to point out that it's your internet service provider that really is the risk here because they know everything. And they can do stuff like this easily. It's trivial. Whether that's your carrier or your home internet service provider, they can do this. And you got to think that Comcast is not exactly motivated to protect my privacy.
It depends on how you look at it. I mean, if a carrier is cavalier with your privacy, they will lose customers.
If people find out. I think Verizon figured, nobody will ever notice this. It shows how stupid they are. They did do it for 2 years.
This stuff, right, and people eventually find out whether you're a carrier, an ad-serving company, or the NSA.
Right.
Eventually people find out. This stuff comes out. So you can't just throw tracking stuff without disclosing it into the traffic, into the web. It'll come out. But the question is, how upset will consumers be? First of all, will they understand what you're talking about when what people are talking about when they reveal this? And then how much of a hue and cry will there be?
Right.
It depends.
Well, I think we've all been worn down at this point.
Yeah, exactly.
People are pretty cynical about it, and we figure, well, if they're not doing it, everybody else is going to do it. So do I really want to go through the trouble of getting out of my contract with Verizon, going with somebody else, or changing ISPs, because I don't think there's anybody that anyone trusts anymore. And we figured that's just the way the world is today. I think it's a sad testament, but I do think that people are just kind of worn down and just figured, there is no privacy anymore. Yeah, right. What are you going to do?
What are you going to do? The real, I think, the benefit to Verizon, even if they don't use it, is that they could sell. They know a lot of personal information about you because you had to give them your social security number, your name, address. They know all that stuff as a customer. Now, well, the ad networks have the UIDH. What if maybe we did a thing where you tell us the UIDH and we'll tell you the guy's name? And for a buck. It's just a buck. So there, you could see where this nexus could be very bad. FCC, though, is going to jump right in and protect us, right? FCC is considering actually what might be a good, I think, on the face of it. Now, I have not delved deep into it, which means I haven't listened to all the smart people like Cory Doctorow and others. But the FCC is considering what they call a hybrid regulatory approach to net neutrality. Remember, the FCC has been trying to find a way through this. We've talked an awful lot about it. Some people say the FCC should adopt Title III regulation of internet service providers, call them common carriers, and then they would have the right to regulate them. Others say, well, that is going to just kill Title II, not Title III. It's of the Communications Act of 1934. It's going to kill, you know, having this kind of heavy duty government oversight is just going to kill the internet. And by the way, there's not even any agreement on places like the EFF where there's a lot of debate. Who should protect us? We agree that we need net neutrality, but should we expect lawmakers to do that? They are, we know, not particularly sophisticated, sometimes ham-handed. They might do a worse job than no regulation at all. So the chairman of the FCC, Tom Wheeler, who is, I've never considered our friend, considering he comes from the cable and wireless industries before he was made chairman of the FCC, has actually come up with something interesting. A split the baby approach to net neutrality, a hybrid approach in which they would use Title II for wholesale transactions. So this is complicated to explain, but remember the Netflix kerfuffle where Netflix was basically slowed down by Comcast because Comcast just didn't spend money on their interconnect. They let the connection between Netflix and Comcast become congested and eventually got Netflix to give them some money. Well, we need the money for a better router. Can you just give us a few million dollars for the better router a month? And they gave them the money, and now all of a sudden there's no congestion anymore. So that's the interconnect. That's the wholesale internet business. And then, of course, there's the retail business between me and Comcast. Mm. So what the FCC is considering is regulating the wholesale transaction, but not regulating the retail transaction. Keep an eye on these interconnects to make sure there are no toll lanes on the internet, which is one of the key concerns I think we all have. But not get government regulation into how the internet service provider works with the consumer. Good idea? Is it too early to know?
It's early to know. I don't like the idea of the retail side of my relationship with of letting the ISPs monkey with toll lanes or not toll lanes.
It's not an accident that I put these two stories together, yeah, I might point out.
Between me and
right.
The... my ISP. Now, if my ISP is protected from being charged more for particular traffic than other traffic by the big interconnects, great for them, but I kind of want the same protection.
Well, and that's what some privacy advocates have said. No. You should have Title II across the board.
Yeah.
I do worry, and I have heard from a lot of people say, boy, the government regulation can be so heavy-handed, it may not be appropriate in this case. They move slowly.
Well, the concern I have is that this can change from administration to administration in terms of enforcement.
Right.
I mean, they can have these things on the book and say, yes, we can regulate you under Title II. But let's say an administration comes in that's very friendly to big business and to lobbyists for these big ISPs and say, well, you know, you say it's kind of up to your discretion. Well, we know that you would like us to be more of a free market and therefore... get away with some of this stuff. And so even under Title II, I am a little concerned if there aren't some fairly hard and fast rules that somebody can say, no, you've crossed that line, that we're going to be in trouble, if it really is just discretionary, depending on how they happen to feel or who's in power at that time.
It's a very tricky technical issue. I'm glad the FCC is considering alternatives. I'm thrilled to hear that they're at least considering some Title II regulation.
I wish the market was free enough that...
Then we wouldn't have to worry.
That consumers would be able to call the shots.
If you had choice, this wouldn't be a problem. But most of us...
That's what's really sad about this.
Yeah, it's a duopoly at best.
That we, one way or the other, the government has to say something about this. Either we're going to do this or we're not going to do this, but they have to be a part of it.
Or encourage competition in some way. Maybe there's some way to facilitate competition.
Yeah, that always works when the government tries to encourage competition.
We're going to take a break. Our show today brought to you by Stamps.com, the place to go instead of the post office so that you can print your own postage anytime you want. What it's really for, I got to tell you, if you do mailing in your business, if you send out brochures, flyers, you send out bills, or especially if you send out products, if you're an Etsy or eBay seller or an Amazon seller, you got to check out Stamps.com. It makes you look more professional. It saves you time. It saves you money. Because you print postage for any letter, any package, any time with your computer, your printer. You don't need a postage meter. You can print right on the envelopes, your logo, the return address, pre-populated. They'll even pull the recipient's address from the web page or from your QuickBooks or your address book. We've got this great digital scale that comes with your no-risk trial offer that automatically makes sure you got exactly the right postage. Have you ever done that? I used to do that, put extra postage on because you don't want it returned. It's a waste of money. Or have you ever had mail returned? I get mail all the time that's postage due. That's crazy. Stamps.com, folks. You even get discounts you can't get at the post office. Certified mail, return receipt, international customs forms automatically filled out. One click of the mouse gives you package discounts and discounted package insurance at Stamps.com. Look, here's the deal. Go to Stamps.com. See that microphone? Actually, I don't see the microphone. There it is in the upper right-hand corner. If you don't see a microphone, go back to Stamps.com, front page, click the microphone, enter TWIT. You're going to get a $110 bonus offer. It includes this digital scale and up to 50. Ooh, I like that. Up to $55 in free postage. I'm glad they got rid of this silly picture of me. Stamps. Actually, Prisco, I bet you get me anyway. Stamps.com. Yeah, sorry. I tried. No more trips to the post office. $110 offer, and of course you get the month of Stamps.com. Give it a try. Stamps.com. Use the offer code TWIT. The 20th anniversary of the banner ad. That's a sad, sad commemoration. Did you see the world's first?
Come on, man. I mean,
hey, without that, what would have you seen this ad? This was the first banner ad. This was on. Remember Hotwire?
Mm-hmm.
So, that is an ugly bet. That really does not bode well for the future of the internet right
there. Got to start somewhere.
Punch the monkeys next, right? Where is this story? Let me go back. I just lost it. Hotwired was trying to figure out a way to, I guess, make some money. This is from the Internet History Podcast. And they decided that, well, maybe we could put ads on our site. This was one of 12 to 14 banners, which all went live October 27th, 1994, when Hotwired.com launched. I remember Hotwired well. That was a news site. It was Wired's online news site, right?
It was good.
Did you work there?
No. Okay. I worked at CNET
in that year?
In 96.
96.
That's when I started.
I was doing radio by then. Yeah. Talk, I was doing Dvorak on computers, so I remember this. 94, most people weren't even online at that point.
I think that's when we put Byte.com online.
Byte.com.
94, 95.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep.
So no, worth listening to the Internet History Podcast. The first banner ad, and I think one of the guys on the podcast was actually the guy who thought it up, so you can boo him when he comes on stage. I think we've done most of these stories in the past here. I don't want to bring back old stories. Kim Kardashian. That's all I have to say about that.
That's enough. That's funny.
That was a good interview with Kara Swisher. There was an interesting body language, though. Kara was facing one way, arms folded. We were hoping to get Kara to talk about that, but she couldn't make it. Do we have a big week ahead? Let's take a look. Mr. Mike Elvin.
Global chip giant Qualcomm reports earnings on Wednesday, November 5th, and AOL will do the same on Thursday, November 6th. Also on Thursday, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg plans something called the Community Q&A, where he'll essentially hold a Reddit-style AMA for 1 hour. Anyone can submit questions on Zuckerberg's blog post announcing the event, and the session will be streamed live. That's what's coming up this week, Leo. Back to you.
Mike Elgin in our tech news today, every Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. We have two new shows every Monday through Friday, by the way. I want you to know, if you're interested in tech news, you can keep up with it. 10 a.m. Pacific, that's 1 p.m. Eastern time, 1800 UTC, Monday through Friday. And then in the afternoon, it's Sarah Lane with tech news tonight, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern time. And that would be 2400, right at midnight UTC, if you want to get your daily dose of tech news. I want to thank Mr. Christopher Breen of MacWorld.com.
Thanks,
Leo.
Good
to see the hair of Breen and the body of Breen.
There it is.
So Body of Breen is your Twitter account.
Yes, I'm Body of Breen. I am not Hair of Breen. There is somebody else who's Hair of Breen. I don't know who that is.
You do not have control of the hair.
I have no control of the hair. It just does this. I wake up in the morning and this is what happens.
Doesn't it? It looks like his hair might have a Twitter account, actually.
No, it should. I think it's doing stuff at night I know nothing about.
It's great to see you, Christopher. I'm glad you survived the massive layoffs at Macworld. If anybody should still be there, it's you. I don't know. Is that a bad thing to say? It's like
I don't know. I don't know. No, I'm glad to be there. I mean, we're really kind of working like a startup, and it's really interesting. We have a lot more freedom than we did in the past. So, it's more work. It's harder work, but it's so far it's been pretty rewarding.
People should go to MacWorld.com and not assume it's gone, because there's great stuff, and there is still a monthly digital edition of Macworld magazine. So. Good stuff. Chris is doing great work.
Come on by.
Macalope's still there.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Love Mr. Macalope. We also want to thank Rafe Needleman, who's doing a great job at Yahoo Tech, tech.yahoo.com. Let's face it, this is why Macworld and many other magazines have ceased print, is because this is a magazine on the web. It's great, and it's up.
We're doing.
I mean, it's beautiful. David Pogue's there with his videos, Pogue's Basics. And you're saying you're kind of targeting this for the normal person.
It's tech for everybody. I mean, you know, technology is not reserved for just nerds in the tech bubble.
Right. Not anymore.
And everybody is a newbie at something, right?
Right.
That's why we have the new Pogue's Basics series, you know, right. Little things that you should know that you just assume that everybody knows but they don't. My mom, for example, I just gave her my old iPhone 5. So I got the iPhone 6. And you think that these phones are also very intuitive, but there's so much undocumented stuff, all the gestures and the secrets and all that stuff. And I'm realizing and trying to teach her how to use this phone that it's going to take a year before she's facile on this thing.
Yeah.
So that's why we have Pogue's Basics, just to help people kind of do the little things, like just squeeze the phone to stop it from ringing.
What?
You'll hit a button and it'll stop ringing.
Just squeeze it.
Just squeeze
something
it.
Something will happen.
You'll hit a button and it'll shut off.
I never thought of that.
It works.
By the
stuff
way,
like
this
that.
Is Becky Worley does great stuff for you.
Oh,
this
I love
is her
piece.
Review of the Pavlok, which
some evil genius, some sick, whatever, managed to take a fitness band and put a shocker, like a dog collar shocker, in it. So if you don't meet your goal, if you don't walk enough, first it'll beep, and then it'll buzz you, and then it will actually zap you.
And Becky tried this.
You know, journalism is not all like cupcakes and caviar, man. Look at this.
It's her. It looks like it hurts. Whoa,
it hurts.
She says, whoa. One of the few people I know who can look absolutely gorgeous while getting shocked by her wristwatch. Fun. Yeah, Becky's one of your stalwarts there. That's great.
Oh, she's great.
Yep.
Yeah. It's a good video.
Yeah.
She almost smacked herself in the face with that thing.
Becky does these from her kitchen.
Voltage, yep. But the power of the device is when it's at
Love
full
it.
Power.
She was a nun for Halloween. Did you see the picture?
I saw her,
of her?
Facebook picture, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It actually was kind of, she looked good.
None the wiser.
I thought, none the wiser.
Yep.
We want to thank you for joining us. We do this show, This Week in Tech, every Sunday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. Now, we did that stupid daylight saving thing, and so we set our clocks back an hour. So while we are still at the same time for us, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time, that is now an hour later UTC. So it is, I have to do the math, 3 plus 12 is 15 plus 8 is 2300 UTC. You're going to have to do the math to figure out what that is in your time zone, okay? Thank you for being here. If you can't make it live, we do love it if you're here live, but if you can't make it live, you can always watch on demand audio and video available at twit.tv or wherever podcasts are aggregated, stored, and disseminated like iTunes. And probably your phone has a dozen ways to get it, Stitcher. And there's some great Twit apps, too, you could put on your smartphone or your Roku box. We hope you do that. If you want to be here in studio, we've got five people who did not pass out. Six. The rest are gone. You can email tickets at twit.tv. We'll put a very uncomfortable chair out for you. You like the chair? It's good? You feeling all right? Okay. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time. Another Twit is in the can. Bye-bye, everybody. Golf clap. Doing the Twit.